You are listening to Real World News.
The World Bank is hitting new records in terms of its funding to highly polluting projects in several parts of the world and is increasing its support to coal. Nevertheless, the bank claims to be leading the struggle against climate change at the international level. This seems to be a joke, but it is true. It would be funny if it wasn't dangerous. On Saturday at the UN climate talks, policy analyst of Friends of the Earth US, Kate Horner, presented a new publication written by Friends of the Earth International about the actions of the World Bank. The report, called World Bank Catalyzing Catastrophic Climate Change, denounces the role of the World Bank in funding polluting industries in several countries and its attempts to control climate finance at world level. Real World Radio interviewed Horner to know more about these issues. The activist also made reference to another key issue at the climate talks in Bonn, the Reducing Emissions from Deforestation and Forest Degradation in Developing Countries mechanism. Finally, she made reference to the role of the U.S. in these international negotiations.
Real World Radio is interviewing Kate Horner, politics analyst from Friends of the Earth United States. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks very much.
Kate, Friends of the Earth International has launched on Saturday a new report on the World Bank. You are the person in charge of presenting this here in Bonn in the new round of talks of the United Nations on climate change. How would you summarize the content of this new report?
Well, I think that the new report looks at the role of the World Bank, particularly this year, which is an important year for the World Bank, as it does several things. It's going to be revising its energy strategy. It's trying increasingly to have a new stake in climate finance. And yet we also see in this report that their financing for fossil fuel lending is increasing significantly, as well as lending for other projects which emit significant greenhouse gas emissions. That's a real concern for lots of reasons. Firstly, given their role in financing fossil fuel lending, they have no place in being the climate financier for the UN Convention on Climate. The World Bank was designated as the interim trustee of the newly established Green Climate Fund. Since then, as the fund is being designed, a secretary has been set up to help support the design of the fund, and the World Bank is playing an increasingly prominent role in this secretariat function as well. This has raised a lot of concerns from both civil society and governments, citing what's called the Arthur Andersen syndrome, which many of you will recall from the Enron scandal, in which Arthur Andersen was both involved in auditing Enron and in providing consultancy services, which raises the specter of a very serious conflict of interest on the part of the World Bank. And in that case, given its role as a lender for fossil fuel infrastructure and the possible conflict of interest, we think that the World Bank should recuse itself and back off from the Green Climate Fund and allow parties to establish a fund that has a real chance of delivering long-term sustainable results for the climate, for both adaptation and mitigation.
Kate, there in this new report, you can see the records of the World Bank financing fossil fuels last year, and especially carbon projects in different parts of the world, as India or South Africa, for example, which are two examples which are specially mentioned there in the report. How do you explain that with these numbers, really high numbers, financing this kind of projects, the World Bank anyway manages itself to be as the Green Climate Fund trustee, and more than this, trying to play important roles, for example, also in RED or other financing issues here in the negotiations? How does it do that?
Well, that's a fine question. Just going back to the projects that you're talking about, for example, one of them, the Eskom coal project in South Africa, is problematic for several reasons. It's going to be lending to the 4,000 megawatt Medupi coal-fired power plant. The power plant will service not those who do not currently have electricity, but large industry to facilitate their increased mining. to pay for the cost of the loan, energy prices will increase by well over 130%. That's a cost that will be borne by the average family in the region of the power plant, and certainly goes against the World Bank's mission to provide poverty alleviation and sustainable development. The other obvious consequence is continuing to emit high fossil fuel energy emissions in South Africa. Additionally, I think part of the reason why they have so much support is because developed countries don't want to see their money going to the UN, where developing countries will have an equal voice. One of the criticisms that has long been raised about the World Bank is the unequal say in how money is used at the World Bank. Developing countries have long said that they want a fund that has significantly lower transaction costs, that's guided by the principles of the convention, and in which they have an equal say in how the money is used. There have been other conventions, importantly, like the Montreal Protocol, that it's attempting to reduce ozone-depleting substances, that established a fund very quickly, and they used a competitive bidding process, and it wasn't actually the bank that won because it's so expensive to lend through the bank. All that said, I think part of the reason why they are able to continue to position themselves is because they're an established institution, and it makes it very difficult to establish new institutions that may be more effective. For example, the UN presently has an adaptation fund to support the needs of developing countries who are currently impacted by the climate crisis. Unfortunately, the World Bank has also developed a new fund called the Pilot Program for Climate Resilience, which has the same mission. Instead of funding the UN fund, which has which is up and running, has delivered money to countries, in which countries have direct access to the fund and can access money directly, several donor governments still are giving money to the World Bank instead because they prefer an institution where there's a $1, one vote decision-making process.
Okay, Kate, the different social movements and social organizations which are working together here in Bonn and the other rounds of negotiations and on the issues of climate, they are demanding the World Bank out of climate finance. Is there any option to get that? For example, this decision taken in Cancun about the World Bank being the trustee of the new Green Climate Fund, is there any option to change it?
What has been decided already is that the bank will be the interim trustee. We're still fighting very, very hard for the bank not to be the trustee of the fund beyond this interim phase. I think when we look back at what happened in Cancun and in Copenhagen, developed countries who have yet to make good on their dual obligation to both reduce their emissions and provide long-term finance are using very, very small amounts of climate finance money to secure outcomes that are favorable to them at the expense of developing countries. So what we saw in Cancun was the release of a WikiLeaks article that suggested that the United States was bullying other countries to sign up to the Copenhagen Accord by using the development assistance. We had already heard of reports that the U.S. had denied development assistance to both Bolivia and Ecuador, but the WikiLeaks article showed that the extent of the bullying was far worse than we had previously imagined. And I think it's tactics like this that developed countries use to put pressure on developing countries who are already experiencing significant challenges with respect to poverty, health, education, and don't have additional resources to fight this new climate crisis that's been imposed on them by the wealthy world. And so what we will continue to push for is that the bank is not involved in this process and supporting developing countries in making sure that their demands for equity and justice are met.
Kate, changing the topic, you have been following especially the issues on the mechanism called reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation, RED. What is the actual situation with these mechanisms in the negotiations?
That's a great question. Parties met yesterday for the first time to discuss financing options for reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation. The representative from Guyana opened his remarks by saying, "Cars kill people every day, but we don't ban cars. We put in place safety regulations like traffic lights and speed limits." And then he said, "The same is true for the risks associated with markets." And I think that that captures some of the feeling of many who are pushing very strongly for carbon markets in RED, in the sense that they think they can deal with the challenges of carbon trading by having complex rules and methodologies. What we see very clearly is, from our analysis on the ground, we recently issued a report called 10 Myths Exploded on RED, which lays out why carbon trading for forests will never work. What we see on the ground right now from the countries who are implementing these RED programs is that the vast majority of money and attention is being focused on developing very complicated systems for measuring carbon at the expense of the policies and programs that would actually deliver emissions reductions. So what we need to see is more of an emphasis on addressing the drivers of deforestation. So that includes both the role of consumptive countries and their increasing demand for the wood and agricultural products that drive deforestation. And in developing countries, we need to see both increased political will to address this problem, because we're not seeing significant political will. And that's true in Indonesia and Guyana, who are taking a business-as-usual approach to their forest sector. And we need to see both improvements in governance, including land tenure reform that ensures the rights of communities and indigenous peoples to their land. We know from lots of examples that when communities have clear title to their land, they're much better able to protect the forests where they live and rely on for resources. And then lastly, countries need to articulate new development strategies that aren't premised on forest extraction. So countries that extract timber resources, either for the timber themselves or to clear way for palm oil, or where the expansion of ranching for soya plantations that's driving deforestation, there needs to be new development strategies that don't rely on these kind of extractive industries to meet development needs.
Kate, how would you summarize the position of Friends of the Earth International regarding these mechanisms regarding RED?
We have long opposed the inclusion of forest carbon markets, and increasingly, as we see how RED is being developed on the ground, we need to see a very significant change in trajectory for RED to be successful, because it's not successful as it stands because of the large emphasis on this future system of carbon trading, which won't materialize the resources that are needed to address the problem.
Kate, what is the position of Bolivia regarding RED especially?
That's a great question. Bolivia, like many other areas of the climate negotiations, has been a forceful and courageous advocate for what is needed to address this crisis. Unlike many other countries, they recognize that forests are not merely sticks of carbon, but they have multiple uses for the country and for the communities that live in them. And their position has long been that they want to see additional financing for forest protection, recognizing the multiple use of forests. For a couple of years ago, they put together a position calling for a window under the new financial mechanism to support forest protection. That would address both the governance issues and the land tenure reform and any other activities that Bolivia needed to implement to be able to address increasing rates of deforestation.
Okay, Kate, before we finish, would you like to ask to add something that maybe I didn't ask you about?
Well, because I'm from the U.S., I would be remiss in noting, in not noting that the U.S. continues to be an extremely damaging actor in these climate negotiations. As you all know, they did not sign on to the Kyoto Protocol, the only legally binding instrument that we have to address greenhouse gas emissions, and instead are trying to create this new system called a pledge and review system, where countries merely pledge whatever they're willing to do domestically, regardless of whether or not that adds up to what is required to keep the world safe. Additionally, as we know, there have been serious flaws in the use of market mechanisms like carbon trading in the Kyoto Protocol. And the U.S. is trying to expand the use of those market mechanisms in a new system called pledge and review. Most recently, and last week, they said that they were not willing to discuss long-term sources of finance for climate protection and instead wanted to use a pledge and review system for finance, in which countries would merely pledge some amount that they were willing to mobilize domestically, again, regardless of whether the total sum would be equal to the challenge faced by developing countries. This kind of behavior is totally unacceptable, goes against President Obama's support for the need for multilateralism, and is a damaging precedent to set in the UN climate negotiations.
There are some countries also which do not want a second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol, but they want these flexibilities of the Kyoto Protocol, this carbon trading and this mechanism.
Exactly. Several countries, most recently Canada, has indicated that they're not going to sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. They join Russia, Japan, and Australia, who've made increasingly clear statements that they don't want to join the Kyoto Protocol because it requires them to make legally binding emissions reductions in their own countries. And yet they continue to advocate for the expansion of carbon trading mechanisms, which allow polluting industries in their countries to continue polluting while not delivering significant finance to developing countries.
Kate Horner from Friends of the Earth.